Welcome to the Perspectives on Healthcare podcast, where members of the medical community from different roles, venues, and locations share their unique perspectives on quality healthcare, its future, and how to improve it. Now, from the Your Keynote Speaker studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here is your host, Rob Oliver.
Thank you, and I appreciate you being with me today for another episode of Perspectives on Healthcare. I am very excited for a number of reasons, but today's perspective comes from, and I quote, across the pond. We are bringing in a guest from the UK. Her name is Nava Carman. She is an acupuncturist, an herbalist, and an educator. She deals with fertility. She's a fantastic person, and I'm delighted to have her here today. Nava, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
No problem at all. So tell me a little bit about yourself and your role in healthcare, please.
I'm an acupuncturist and herbalist, as you mentioned, and it's all I've ever done my whole life. I've never had another job. So I knew very early that this is what I want to do. I had a really lovely thing happen with a patient very early on in my career that zeroed me in on fertility from general healthcare. So of the almost 23 years I've been in practice, 21 have really been just fertility focused. And that journey led me to this quite interesting niche area where I occupy now, which is seeing men and women and people over 40 who really have complex conditions. So autoimmune problems, endometriosis, polycystic ovaries, problems with recurrent miscarriage and unexplained infertility, and even people who I had one lady through a couple of months ago who'd had 13 IVF cycles before she got to me.
Wow.
So this is the area that I now occupy, and that's also the area that I found fascinating and that I teach from, because it's really become my mission in life to help other practitioners like me be really skilled in the area of the most complex things, because they have become the more everyday things that we see these days.
Okay. And so you're talking about acupuncture and herbalism, and do you find that you lean more on one than the other? Is it the conjunction of both together, or what do you find in your practice?
I'd sort of describe myself as working in an integrated way. So for example, I might have someone come in to see me who'd had miscarriages, and I might choose first to start off by checking their hormone levels. So all the biomedical things, looking at their progesterone levels. And then I'd take that in and I'd look at the most appropriate way of raising those progesterone levels, whether it be acupuncture or herbal medicine or both. And I'd craft a program for them. And it might not just be me, it might be all the other colleagues I work with. It might be that they need some functional medicine. It might be they need surgery in some cases. And I'd craft a program for them, of which Chinese medicine is an integral arm, and we get them where they need to go.
Okay. And so what I'm hearing you say is that it's not just you operating, you know, from your own practice, but you're looking to create a plan of treatment that encompasses everything that's involved. And, you know, it's a team effort in the places that it's needed, and different members of the team have different things that they can contribute. And you may not need all the team members, you may need certain, but it starts with that assessment of what are the actual needs. Okay. What does quality healthcare mean to you?
Quality healthcare means empowered healthcare. And empowered very specifically means access to information so you can make informed decisions. So for example, often when clients are dealing with fertility challenges, they'll go into an IVF clinic, and an IVF clinic is there to offer them IVF as the solution. For me, empowered healthcare is that I, and how I train my colleagues, is to stand in between myself and the medical profession and to interpret and inform and support and actually help find out the why, so they can choose from a variety of treatments that are available, including IVF if necessary, to allow the client to get where they need to go. And most importantly, to make a healthy sort of couple first, because from a healthy couple comes the best chance at a healthy child. So we're involved in epigenetic improvements in that way too. And that's really what empowered healthcare means to me.
Okay. It's very interesting to hear you say that. I mean, I've said this on the program before, but you know, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? So when you go to an IVF clinic, that their solution is IVF. But you're talking about more of, you almost have like a guide role or an informative role rather before you have a practitioner role. Am I properly understanding that?
Yes. In fact, I call myself and the colleagues I train detectives. We're really fertility detectives because we want to understand the why. We don't want to just fix it, because even what people are sold as fixing it often doesn't do the job. We want to know, why are you here? Why are you in our clinic? Why are there problems with the DNA of your sperm? Why is it that you're not ovulating? We want to understand and fix up the why of it. And then things flow from there.
Okay. And I would imagine one of the issues you're talking about, you know, making a happy couple, fertility issues within a marriage can be very stressful. And so now when you most need to be at ease and calm and, you know, to kind of be in a good psychological place, you are under a tremendous amount of anxiety, stress, and pressure. And so what you're doing, again, if I'm hearing properly, is you're looking holistically, not just at which partner it might be that's having issues, but it's broader than that. It's both partners and it's the relationship together. Am I understanding right?
Yes, that's quite right. And then to be able to offer them coaching or hypnotherapy or psychotherapy or the psychological support is a huge part if it's needed. But the simple fact of fact finding, empowering with information and having a plan is often such a huge relief to couples that they're not on, you know, they're not on this journey on their own, and there's a plan for where we're going to go and how we're going to get there. That's a huge relief for a lot of people.
I can imagine. Can you give me an example of quality healthcare?
So I can give you a very good example. And in fact, if your listeners want to go and look on my website, what I have is a video that I made. One of a client in her 20s, sorry, in her 30s, one in her 40s, and one in their 50s. And so empowered healthcare is healthcare for me that doesn't discriminate on the basis of age, doesn't discriminate on the basis of body type, gender, sexuality, and really is focused on looking at that individual, what they bring, and making sure that you meet them exactly where they are, listen to them, trust them as the expert in their body, and filter that through the thing that you bring, which is the knowledge of your own expertise. It's a really a partnership between me and my clients in which I listen really well and I support them through that journey.
How important do you think that listening skill is?
Massive. Massively important. And it's oftentimes the speed of the consultation that the Western doctors have to have in order to make money, certainly in the UK. I don't know how it is there, but there's a process that they're under a lot of pressure and they just cannot do what we do. So there is a place for us. There's a place for me, for example, to pick up what has been missed. So, for example, in that video, the client that we video who is in her 40s had a decade of infertility due to not picking up a thyroid problem. I picked it up in the first month. We diagnosed it. We got her the right treatment. And 3 months later, she's pregnant naturally. So we perform that very vital cog in the wheel. There's room for everybody.
Sure. And some ways I think that part of that listening and taking the time, it allows the client, the patient, whatever the proper term is, to express their feelings, and then once they've kind of worked through that, then you get into the diagnostic side of things. At least that would be how I imagine things. What do you wish people understood about your role in healthcare?
I think if people had been brought up with the knowledge of how to eat well, how to move their bodies, how to look after themselves, and another layer to that, if people had the financial access to all of the tools that are out there, life would be very different for a practitioner like me. But if I could send somebody away who's listening with something really concrete, that is that the preconception time is everything. It's too late to wait until you're trying for a baby to look after yourself and your health physically, mentally, and emotionally. All of that should be attended to before you're actually trying for a baby, because that is what makes the difference.
Okay. there's a lot of people that have a fear of acupuncture with a concern that, you know, are they going to leave a needle in me, or, you know, they're going to put a needle on my head and then light it on fire, and or that it's going to be painful. Can you address any of those concerns?
Yes, and it's a great question to ask. Thank you, because it's a lovely thing to be able to put people's minds at rest about. So the training in the UK, and it's similar in America, is we have to have 3,600 hours minimum training. So we get a lot of training to put a needle in somebody. It's not like dry needling, which is when a physio might do a weekend course or do trigger point acupuncture. It's not when a medical doctor does a short course. We are rigorously trained. And that means we get anatomy, physiology, pathology. We know where we're putting the needles. People have different techniques. So when it comes to needling, I'm a very gentle needler, but there are some people who come from a very strict classical Chinese tradition whereby if the needle isn't really thick and like snapped in with a hammer, it's not cool. So you can always talk to your practitioner about the sort of person you are. It's just like some people like a heavy massage and some people like a strokey thing. You talk to your acupuncturist and they should be able to adjust the needle technique so it works for you and your body. I like to say that what you feel on some needles is sensation. But sensation is very different from pain. Acupuncture should never feel painful. And don't forget that a lot of people have an idea of a needle being like the thing that's used to take blood. But our needles don't go through veins or nerves or anything other than flesh. And the layer that is responsive to pain is very thin. So once you've tapped an acupuncture needle through, all you've got is flesh without any nerve endings underneath. So the entry point in the body and the technique for the entry point is everything. After that, there should be no feeling. And if there is, we've got to take it out because there's something wrong.
Okay. And I mean, what I'm hearing you say then is, you know, if there is pain, that's something to share with the acupuncturist to let them know this hurts, and they will address that because it's not supposed to be happening that way. Yeah. What excites you about the future of healthcare?
Well, what has excited me is the increased dialogue around male fertility. So male fertility has dropped by 50% in the last 50 years. It's quite catastrophic. And we now know that just because a sperm analysis is okay, doesn't mean what's underneath with the DNA fragmentation is okay. And male fertility is half the equation, right? So if you have problems with DNA fragmentation, you are looking at recurrent miscarriage in women. You're looking at poorer embryos or no embryos made in IVF cycles. And the dialogue and the conversation around male fertility is increasing. And it's so important because IVF clinics are very much focused on women. And we know that the younger the egg is, the more it actually has the innate genetic capability of overcoming any flaws in sperm. And so for many years, it's been all about, well, the sperm isn't great, but we'll just get an egg donor from a 20-year-old and we'll fix that right up. And now the conversation is much more about, well, why is your sperm like that? And what can we do to improve things so you make a healthy couple who can both use their own equipment to make their own child?
Okay. How do you deal with the shame factor in that? Because from a male perspective, there is the macho masculine thing. And now you're saying there's something wrong with me that I can't produce what, you know, just from a classic perspective, I can't produce what my wife needs in order to have a child. I'm inadequate as a male to be a father. How do you deal with that psychological side of shame?
Well, we have psychological support for sure. And a lot of the time men make their way into their clinic via their wives or their partners for sure. But I think there is a generational shift that has started to happen whereby men are much more equal partners with their female counterparts, that they're talking about it being half their responsibility and that it is a practical issue to be overcome just in the way that the women have been dealing with it for years. Men are not so resistant to having children earlier in life, which helps because over 40, men are affected in the same way as women. Hmm. So I do think there is an openness and a generational shift that has happened, which means that male toxicity that perhaps previous generations were lumbered with, which also led to things like not even having regular health checks for themselves, that has slowly started to shift. And what's really interesting to me is that sperm is like an example of and sort of an external example of the things that are wrong in the body. So it's no longer just about fertility. We know that if there is a problem with sperm, there's a greater likelihood of heart attacks. There's a greater likelihood of mortality rates being higher in men. So it's beginning to understand that's just part of healthcare and not something to be saddled with, as you say, any shame around it.
Very interesting, because what you're doing is you're taking, this is giving you insight into what's going on in the rest of the body. This is not just a function of the reproductive organs. You're looking at it as, I was going to say, as a window into the body. Not that you want anyone's reproductive organs to be a window. But you're looking at it as something that opens up insight into what's going on in the rest of the body. Am I properly understanding that?
Yes, absolutely right. There are three main sperm categories. If one of them is off, you're twice as likely to be fertile. If two of them is off, you're six times as likely to be infertile. And if three of them are off, you're 16 times more likely to be infertile. And along with those are all the other health profiles that come along with the risk factors increasing. So yes, that is our way into understanding what's happening in the body.
Very interesting. What is one thing medical professionals can start doing today to improve the quality of healthcare?
Send people our way. Give us a chance to do our thing, because they don't have the tools. And recognizing where their sphere of expertise finishes and where ours begin is so important. You know, I always say to my clients, I know more about what's happening in an IVF unit and all the biomedicine that's happening there. Of course, I'm not a doctor, but I've taken the time to learn more about what they're doing than they do about what we're doing. And actually working together is the best tool. So if we had a little bit of time to do our job, that would be an amazing turning point for fertility.
Okay. What I'm hearing from you is that you have that respect and appreciation for classic Western medicine, and it is not a reciprocal relationship. That Western medicine typically thinks of itself as being self-contained and not having room for other, you know, hoodoo, voodoo, or whatever they want to call it. And I hope you are not offended by my use of that concept. But is there, I guess what you're asking for is for the folks that are practicing Western medicine just to be a little bit more open-minded with what they're looking for out there. Is that making sense to you?
Yes, quite right. And, you know, I've been lucky enough in London to build up a wonderful network of medical doctors who are just that. So I am able to provide, and a lot of my colleagues have the same thing. We're able to provide our clients with trusted people they can go and see. And we do work as a team for the client, and that's the most wonderful feeling for the client.
Fantastic. Nava, thank you so much for taking the time and working with me across different time zones to be here. I appreciate you sharing. I appreciate your openness, and I appreciate your perspective on healthcare.
Thanks for listening to Perspectives on Healthcare. Visit perspectivesonhealthcare.com to learn more about Rob Oliver or to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If this podcast was valuable, we'd appreciate a review on iTunes. Or if you tell a friend or coworker about the show, that would be helpful too. Join us again next time for more Perspectives on Healthcare.